Yeah, we'll get started anyway. He's here. He's nearby. Okay. I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on this Tuesday, January 24th, 2012. I would ask the audience to join the board as we honor our nation with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. The next item is the approval of the minutes of 1-17-12. And I will second that. Are there any additions or corrections to the minutes? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Minutes are approved. Next item is public comments. This is an opportunity where members of the audience may address the board on any topic that is on today's agenda. Is there anyone that wants to bring something to our attention? Okay, seeing no one, then we'll move on to there are no public hearings, so our first item of consideration is discussion and consideration of social media policy. Matt Emerson.
Good morning.
Good morning, Matt.
There's been quite a bit of interest generating from different departments and offices here at the county at trying to get involved with social media networks like Facebook, Twitter, Nixel, YouTube, and it's grown, I would say, considerably over the past 6 months or so, the amount of interest, and in an effort to try to encourage and kind of manage those services, we put together a social media policy that I think will entice departments to try to interact with people via these new methods and also try to make sure that we're approachable and interactive in the way that we deal with the public over these new services. So what we've put together here mostly deals with some management issues, trying to make sure that the content stays up to date, accurate, and that we're being responsive to any kind of inquiries or items that are posted on there, that we have authoritative methods of posting information and responses on there as well. We also have a code of conduct or standards of decorum to try to ensure that everybody has an adequate ability to comment and have their items addressed through the offices that we have here at the county. So that's pretty much the extent of what we have here. There's also some outlines in here to make sure that any content that's posted to the social medias are publicly disclosed and also a part of the open records that we have. One of the items we have here deals with any kind of personal messaging needs to be handled through email, which is obviously a part of our open records request. All our email system is handled through that, and we have technologies in place to facilitate that should that need to take place. So, but that's about the extent of what we have here. Right now, I'll just give you kind of a where we are today with social media. We have a county Facebook page. We have a county Twitter account. The Sheriff's Office also has a Facebook fan page. The Story County Animal Shelter has a Facebook fan page. The Sheriff's Office also utilizes something called Nixel, which is an information dispersal system that they use for accidents, things like that to put out there. So we'd like to grow this a little bit with our web project that we're working on. I think there's even more potential for this type of interaction and use with that. So we put together this policy for your review and hopefully approval. You guys have any questions?
First question. First of all, I want to thank you for addressing this. You had contacted me several weeks ago with the initial outline and the rationale for moving in this direction, and I think it's certainly very appropriate that we do that. And obviously, because it's under the name of Story County, I think it's important that there be policies and procedures in place, not only to help guide department heads, elected officials in terms of what is acceptable use, but also making people very much aware that with this type of media, it does lend itself to areas that may be deemed inappropriate. And the question, as I was looking at the guidelines and the proposals, if you could go back to the second page, we talk about item three, departments that choose to utilize are responsible for the content, maintenance, and management of information. But we don't really talk about monitoring. Nowhere in here is any reference to that. And my concern is, should we somehow be asking our various departments that are doing that is to develop and work through your department with some degree of a system to help monitor some of that, and not that it has to be done daily, but I think there needs to be some type of uniformity by which we monitor what is happening, and because what may be deemed appropriate to one may be very inappropriate to others as they look at it. And I just wanted to ask, is this general enough as it is, or do we need to address that in some way?
Well, in order to have really effective social media tools, it's something that has to be constantly monitored. We live in an age, I think, of instant gratification and the expectation that you're going to get a timely response out of that. And I think that the onus of responsibility for keeping an eye on what's posted to these services is really on the departments that choose to interact that way. Is that what you mean as far as monitoring the content and trying to have responsive nature?
Not quite, but it's part of that, because currently right now under our IT policy, people who utilize the emails and all of these types of things, there is a monitoring provision. We know that we can pull a report through your department and so forth. So I think leading toward that, I'm just wondering if we need to just inform the various departments that that option is available, if they need some additional assistance, that they work with your department. We're not necessarily trying to be the police of what they're put out there, but I think there needs to be that flow of communication that says that, yes, we will assist you and work with you regarding what may or may not be deemed appropriate if there are some questions.
Absolutely.
Rather than it having to come directly to the Board of Supervisors, and we are trying to say, well, yeah, I agree, that's inappropriate, boo.
Oh, yeah, you know, we can.
Listen, I guess.
Absolutely. I think that as far as technical guidance or whatever else, I think that that's a big role of what we play, and I think it's inherently a part of our job to help them out with things like that. So I'm not sure if that needs...
Kind of implied as we go along, but I you're right. I think it's up to the individual department that if whatever department or elected official wants to start a Facebook page, I think ultimately it's their responsibility to monitor that and make sure that, like you say, it's up to date. There's no point in having a Facebook page or any other type of social media outlet that's if people are looking as that as their avenue to get information. If somebody's not on a daily basis, at least taking a look at that and seeing what's out there. But I think ultimately that's up to the individual department or elected official that chooses to go that route.
Yeah, I would say that from a technical standpoint, yes, I think we can help out with any of those kind of issues that pop up. As far as content responses, informed responses, timely responses, I think that as outlined in here, should fall on the departments that choose to use these services.
About 3 years ago, I think, when this was becoming widely used amongst counties, I know Linn County and Johnson County at that time, there was a lot of discussion regarding having designated individuals responsible for posting the content. And I think they're kind of staying with that. And there again is something we haven't really addressed, but that may be something that within the various departments that they want to talk about, having someone who is the designated person who are actually responsible for posting the contents and the updates as to what's happening within those departments. I think it may be a good starting point for them to consider.
I think that's true with any policy. I think if there's, as time goes by and we identify changes that need to be made, I certainly think that's in our purview to make those changes on the advice of our department heads or elected officials. So
I think that's right. Steve Owen, I have a question. As we look at the standards of decorum, do we risk running afoul of any laws or regulations in terms of allowing adequate access to the public if we were to exclude comments based on these eight standards of decorum that are laid out?
No, I think
it's on.
Is it on? Am I on? Well, let's see. What was the question?
It's like a Senate hearing.
Under the standards of decorum, man.
No, I don't think there's no obscenity law per se that I think we're violating. Really, once you open this up as a forum, you know, I look at the social media outlets much like, you know, if the county were to provide a outdoor podium by which people could go and speak freely. There's one actually on the Iowa State campus. You know, they certainly have rules for appropriate speech. This does not limit anyone's speech. They can go on Facebook. They don't have to use our page. They can spout whatever they want about the county in favor or against through any number of channels. If the county, I think, sets this up, we certainly have the right and I think the authority to set policies for what we believe are appropriate standards. Clearly, I think within the government context, the purpose set forth in using these outlets is to provide information to the public that is positive, that is useful, that furthers government service, that furthers public access to public information. Those who choose to hijack it for their own purposes or other purposes that don't seem to comport with that objective, I think the county does have the right to limit and monitor what gets posted, just as any private citizen would on their own Facebook, Twitter, or page otherwise.
And do we have the authority, if we so choose, to waive the 7-day review as part of this and go ahead and make this policy?
Yeah, yes, yes.
Board, this is not part of the normal operating procedure in this regard, but we do have members of the audience and probably people who have used social media in various forms. But as you've listened to the discussion so far, even though you probably haven't necessarily looked at all the things there, do you have any thoughts or comments or things that you think as a board that we need to be mindful of as we go down this path? I wanted to just provide an opportunity for any of you that had any thoughts as you've listened to us undertaking approving a social media use policy. I know it's not normal procedure at this point, but I think it would be appropriate to allow you an opportunity if some of you had a thought that you wanted to call to our attention. Okay, seeing none, thank you. Okay. Any other questions for Matt?
Okay. I'm ready to move approval of social media policy as presented and waive the 7-day review period, effective making it effective immediately.
I'll second that motion.
Been moved and second to approve the social media policy as presented and waive the 7-day review process. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Policy becomes effective immediately. And thank you, Matt, and so forth. Okay.
Do have a couple of additional things. Just want to remind you that we're going to go visit in Urbandale tomorrow to go look at the AVI proposal for the audiovisual system for the board chambers here. Also have some additional changes to the proposal that came from the GovTV folks. They've taken quite a bit off the per meeting cost with that as well for your consideration. So, and I should have some information for you here in just a little bit about that. So,
great.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you.
Thanks for
thank
your
you.
Work on that.
Okay, you bet. All right, item three is consideration of resolution 1256 for a grant application between the Iowa Homeland Security and Emergency Management Division for hazard mitigation planning funding, designation of Story County Emergency Management Coordinator as the county's authorized representative for the execution of the grant with a 15% local match share in kind. Director, Emergency Management, Keith Martin. Welcome.
Good morning, gentlemen. The Story County multi-jurisdictional, multi-hazard plan is important because, first off, it helps each of our communities identify threats to those communities and identify actions to reduce those threats. Additionally, under Iowa Administrative Code and also FEMA rules, having a current hazard mitigation plan is part of the process to be able to be eligible for funding of post-disaster recovery projects. Our current plan was completed in May of 2009, and although it sounds like a long ways off, it must be revised by May of 2014. The process to revise the plan is rather lengthy and manpower intensive, so therefore today's agenda item is to apply for a grant to the Iowa Homeland Security and Emergency Management Division to initiate a contract for this project. And this is consistent with what other counties do. The application is for $100,000. Part of this is our plan is going to expand to include Ames and Iowa State and also each of the school districts as a separate independent jurisdiction. Additionally, the grant appoints, as you pointed out, emergency management as your primary point of contact for this. As a part of the grant application, there is a specific resolution to accept a $15,000 cost share as a part of this grant. And this cost share can be accomplished by in-kind actions. In other words, people going to the meetings, their time and effort will be counted at approximately $26.70 per hour rate. So this will help help defray some of this $15,000 in-kind share. And additionally, I welcome that our communities do get involved in this way and get involved in the process because it'll help both the plan be better and it'll help them learn about the planning process. During the Emergency Management Commission meeting, we discussed the plan on how to divide this in-kind cost share amongst the different jurisdictions, and I'll be working with the different jurisdictions to distribute this cost share plan. What we are asking for is two main items in this is, again, adoption of the resolution, and there is a copy of the resolution that's in the actual form itself, and again, to appoint my office as the POC for this grant. At this time, I'll take any questions that you might have.
Keith, I'd like you to talk just a minute about the meeting with the mayors at the Emergency Management Council and the way it was approved by them to split this in-kind share up.
I sent out a spreadsheet essentially notifying the Emergency Management Commission, which is made up of mayors from all of our jurisdictions, the sheriff's office, and Supervisor Sanders as the Board of Supervisors representative. And what we worked out was a cost share based primarily on population to divide up the different cost share. And it can be translated, again, into either money or a number of hours. During the meeting, we discussed this. It was offered up for discussion. And we requested a formal move by the commission to adopt this as the plan, to get buy-in from the commission on this. And it was brought forth and it was approved unanimously.
Just my question kind of goes back to the application and the resolution as outlined. As I looked at it, it had signatures of council members or board members. Is this necessary that each of the local communities would have to have this signed as well, or would just the normal signature of the board be suffice?
It's my understanding it is just the board, because it is the county itself that's
okay
adopting the resolution.
So it probably will need, should have the probably all three of us
yes,
signature
sir.
At some point. Okay, great. That's what I wanted to check to find out. Okay.
And so that we're clear, as we submit this, clearly we would be committing to the fulfillment of the $15,000 in kind. That said, the share that was approved by the commission obligates Story County to about, roughly $1,500 of the $15,000, and then of course we would have to fill in for any entity that did not ultimately put in the hours they needed to put in. So that's the commitment that we're making here. It appears to me to be exactly the direction we need to head. If in fact we're awarded this grant, it's going to alleviate some of the concern with getting this done over the next 36 months.
I certainly concur with that. However, I also want to ask Keith to consider a contingency. What if we don't receive the grant? I mean, you have designated this as a very important step that needs to take to bring coordination for all of our cities in this direction. So at some point, I would hope you would come back and communicate with us regarding what our next step may be in the worst-case scenario that we weren't awarded the grant dollars. Because I think it is an important thing that we need to consider to move forward and deal with.
I can bring you back contingency plans if we do not. Hopefully I should have a fairly quick response from Department of Homeland Security as to whether we will be awarded. It would be very difficult if we didn't, because this is a very, very lengthy process to complete this planning.
Great. Good. Thank you. Well, if there are no further questions, then this is the resolution. So I would entertain a motion for consideration of Resolution 1256.
I move approval of Resolution 1256.
We need to add to that, designating the Story County Emergency Management.
So added.
Yes, as stated. Okay.
I'll second that.
It's been moved and second the approval of Resolution 1256 for the grant application and designating Story County as the authorized representative of the grant. In their further discussion? Hearing none, roll call. Sanders?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. Resolution 1256 is adopted. Thank you again, Keith.
I like that tie, Keith.
Yep.
Okay. Next item four is discussion of current county procedure concerning employee insurance bids and consideration of working with an agent. HR department head, Alyssa Wignall. Okay.
Good morning.
Good. Hi there.
Currently, most of our insurance comes through ISAC. We are a partner with them. We get our health insurance. Our dental is through ISAC. Our life and disability is through Fort Dearborn, which is actually through Midwest Benefits Consultants, which is a Walmart company. What I would like us to discuss is looking to expand that, keep the ISAC affiliation, but also take some of the insurance out for bid, the short-term, long-term, make sure our premiums that we currently have are competitive. And in order to do that, currently the county does not have an agent that we work with. They have in the past, but that was prior to me coming to the county, so I'm not sure how we went away with that. So I just needed to bring it to a board meeting, have you guys have a discussion, give me direction on how you want me to handle this.
Makes sense to me. I mean, I think it's our job as supervisors to make sure that we're doing our best to watch out for the taxpayers' dollars, along with any money that county employees spend on their insurance, and that's what an insurance agent does. I mean, he or she are charged with finding the best fit for the county and what's the best policy, what's the best company, and along what's the best price, make sure we're getting what we're paying for. So.
So from a standpoint of procedure, assuming that we would approve your request, you would then be submitting letters of interest or RFPs.
I've had about four or five agents actually approach me in the last 8 or 9 months.
Okay, so do we have a way to make sure that that's expanded in such a way, or the communication is so that there may be others that may have an interest, or are we trying to confine that to, say, Story County or the state of Iowa in general? I'm just wondering from the process as in terms of how we're looking at
how we get an agent.
Yeah.
And that's something that I've looked at. You can't really send out an RFP for an agent. There's no, I suppose we could broadcast to have them come and do a short presentation like we did with the compensation study. You know, the agents that actually have approached me are right around this area. They're not out of the state. They're if you're going to choose an agent to work with, I'd rather be approachable. They can come and visit. I know for our liability insurance, we work with NAP Tedesco, and that's worked really well for us in the past. So I don't know what your thoughts are.
Well, I think based on that relationship, I think in one of the areas in the past, before you came on board, trying to communicate with as far away as Kansas City on some of our disability issues, we really had some real issues with that, and I think it would be very important for us to have an agent that we could work directly with, that you could get the kind of questions answered that would be and update us with any changes or possibilities. So I think this would be a step in the right direction for us, and I don't have any reservations regarding this. I just wanted to make sure that if, even though we've heard from four, that if there were potentially others, particularly located within Story County or close by, within a close proximity, and again, hopefully in that discussion, clients that they've served in the past would be something that you would be looking at, I think, that would help us make a final determination too. Okay.
Yeah, I would go one step further, Wayne, and I would say all things being close to equal, I feel really strongly that we'd want to select somebody from Story County. And I think in this case, when you're selecting an agent, we've got some great agents here in Story County. I'd like to see us just put out the word that we are interested in finding an agent for some of this, and empower Alyssa to go out and kind of weed through the list and see who has represented entities like us before, and come back to us with, you know, a small handful of possibilities, and then we make the ultimate decision of how we move forward.
I think it's a great idea, and I think if we can keep it as local as possible, I think that's why we've had such great success with NAP Tedesco. I mean, you know, they were more than willing to come over here and meet with us and get this safety committee started that we've gotten, and Brian Anderson was great to work with, and I mean, he's been here just about every step of the way for us, so.
Okay.
You need further
so what direction? Further action do you need officially from us at this point?
You know,
it said a discussion here, so I think by general consensus, I will call to our assistant county attorney, since it's not wasn't listed as an action item, but I think based on the general consensus of the board that we could empower her to move forward to work with in this area.
I believe that's correct. I don't view this as professional services, as the code sets that out. We're not hiring an attorney, architect, or someone with that state of licensure. So I would suggest that we put out some sort of RFP, RFQ, some sort of request for folks of interest to come and give us their best pitch for why they should be the agent. So I think if you give Alyssa that direction, she can compile that, I presume, and we can move forward from that point.
Great, thank you. Good. So, board, with that, what's your pleasure?
So directed.
Okay. Is there support? It's been moved and second to direct Alyssa to move forward with seeking information from respective agents regarding the various health insurance, disability programs as outlined. With that, All in favor of that directive, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Pose. Motion carries. Thank you, Alyssa. You're always looking for a lot more to do. We can't keep you busy enough.
Oh, my God.
Okay. Moving on to agency report. Welcome, Irv Klaus, Soil and Water Conservation, RCNB. Oh, you even have a co-worker today, huh?
Co-worker. I'd like to introduce Aaron Andrews, who is serving. He's on the staff at Iowa State University with the Iowa Learning Farm, and he is going to be our coordinator for the Hickory Grove Watershed Project. And we'll be reporting on that. I think I sent you electronic versions of our report. I've got hard copies with me. If you'd care to have one, I can give you one. If you want, I can go through this briefly, but
For the public, if you could highlight some of the key things, I think it would be appropriate.
Okay. First of all, I'd like to say that support we get from the supervisors is very much appreciated, and there is a listening to the financial report on the second page there that you can look and see what our balance is as of June of last year. It's kind of interesting that our 2011 annual report is on the fiscal year, so it was at the end of June last year, and we're now halfway into the second year, and that's why I've attached the supplemental report to this, because a lot has happened. Also, I'd like to mention that this article by Jim Gillespie, Can Conservation Wait, is at the invitation. He is the new chief of the Division of Soil Conservation for the Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship. And so we've included that as a article in our annual report. We nominated Mike Todd, who is a science teacher at Ames High and done a lot of work with conservation of water quality and with the Pohl Preserve, the Richard Pohl Preserve that's behind the high school. And Mike was nominated for a state award last year by the Conservation Districts of Iowa, and received that award, and we were very pleased that he was the selectee. Commissioners attended the annual conference in September of last year and participated in quite a few workshops and business meetings that were held, and that's a statewide meeting that's held every year. Hickory Grove Watershed we'll get to in a minute and let Aaron chip in on that. As part of the grant to the that the Iowa State University applied for last year to the DNR, we pledged $5,000 of our county funds towards that project, and we will be picking up the costs of some of the monitoring that's going on over there. Last summer, we were pleased to host the State Committee on Soil Conservation in the county, and gave them a tour of several of our sites, and they were, I think, pleased with what they saw. The State Conservation Committee is appointed by the governor to essentially oversee soil conservation work in the state, and there's seven members, and one of the new members who covers the urban conservation projects is Dale Farnham, and we have appointed him as an assistant commissioner in the county. So he has been coming to our meetings, and we're pleased to have Dale as an assistant commissioner. Also, we took some time this year to try to figure out just how much money from the federal government and the state government is coming into the county to try to get a handle on that, because it's considerable, and I think this will give you some appreciation for that. Notice that under the Natural Resources Conservation Service, which we are a partner with in our district, we have a staff from NRCS that help us administer these programs. The EQIP program, the federal contribution last year was $207,000, and the farmers contributed an equal amount. This is a 50% cost share. In fact, most of these practices are 50%. So the farmer's contribution is also a match. The Conservation Security Program is a program that's been in place at the federal level for quite a while, and this is an attempt to award farmers who are have already been doing conservation, and they can apply for this funding so it to continue that conservation work on their farms. And that would amount to a little over $101,000. We did not have any emergency wetland reserve money this year. And the wetland reserve program amounted to $372,000, almost $73,000. So it kind of gives you an idea of the amount of money that's coming in on an annual basis to the county and assisting with soil conservation. The state has contributed another $22,000, of which we estimated that the farmer contribution on that is $75,000. So these are projects that we certainly approve. And we were fortunate, well, through the efforts of one of our commissioners, Sarah Carlson, we submitted a resolution this year to the county, to the conservation districts of Iowa, that cover crops be included as a practice with cost share money. It hadn't been before. So we made that recommendation, and that would pass with more than 60% of the vote. So that went to the Soil Conservation Committee for consideration, and I think that they have passed that now. So that is a big thing, because cover crops are have proven to be very important in conserving soil during the winter. And a lot of farmers are interested in that now, and so this gives them some incentives to put in cover crops. And so with that, I'd like to mention that we, because of cutbacks in funding both at with the federal level and the state level, we are now sharing a district conservationist with Marshall County, that is Dana Holland, and we are sharing our state funded secretary with Marshall County. So our staff is essentially being stressed with some extra work, and one of the technicians in Marshall County that we're supposed to share back with us has had some health problems, and so we've been inhibited there. So we have a backlog estimated at 2 or 3 years of work that farmers have applied for conservation, and we just can't get to because we don't have adequate staff.
Okay.
The Hickory Grove project is going quite well, I think, because Iowa State was able to obtain the funding from the DNR. And as you know, the DNR has put Hickory Grove Lake at top priority in the state for a renovation of their of the fish populations. So we're working with, and they would not do that work of renovating that fishery without us doing an assessment and implementation of watershed measures. So that's what we're in the process of doing now. We're monitoring water quality, looking at the soil problems in the watershed, and coming up with a plan to rectify those. Aaron? Aaron will be contacting, be the man on the ground to contact individual landowners to work out practices, and also to find out what they have in mind, what their problems are that as they see it. So,
maybe just to elaborate on that. So I came to be with the project officially as of January 1. I've been working with it since last fall. So we have done a few public events and types of things. As Herb said, I'll be getting out and working with farmers to find out what they currently have in place on their land as far as conservation goes, and also find out perhaps what methods they're using as far as farm management goes. We will then use that data to put into a modeling program some folks at the university. We'll be modeling that land use change and try to come up with an implementation plan by April of 2013. Once that plan is approved, then the project will be available for 319 funding, available to apply for 319 funding.
And as part of that communication with farmers, are you also providing best practice type of things that are have been used in other areas for their consideration as part of the ongoing discussion? And will they be directed to a site or an area where they can gain additional information if needed?
Certainly. I think that is a main component of my job, is to get out there and let them know what resources that they have at the state level, at the federal level, and to make that information available to them. So certainly.
What's the biggest concern with Hickory Grove?
Hickory Grove Lake has actually been put on the 2008 303D list as an impaired water body in the state of Iowa for a bacterial impairment. So that is the most pressing issue at this time. It also suffers from heavy nitrogen loading, heavy phosphorus loading, heavy sedimentation in the watershed area. So some conservation practices would certainly go a long way as far as helping the lake.
Do you know about how many acres is included in the
lake? Watershed is pretty small, really. It's about 4,000 acres, so a pretty small one. Certainly, we'd be able to address some of those issues, even just getting a few of the farmers interested and coming in to put some conservation on their land.
And it would be a relatively small group of farmers.
About 15 to 20 or so. So really hoping that we can establish a good working relationship and get some things done.
Right down the road from me, so if you need some help, let me know.
Very well. Very well. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. With regard to Prairie Rivers RC&D, I don't have a written report. Paul and I both serve on that board, and in December the board approved a strategic plan for the next 3 years, and we're pretty excited about the future and what Prairie Rivers is doing. We submitted a proposal in response to an RFP from the Iowa DNR back in the fall for planning money to develop a watershed management authority for Squaw Creek watershed. Now, Squaw Creek is a large watershed of 141,000 acres, I think, and encompasses four counties and four towns, including Ames. There are concerns about flooding, of course, and concerning about water quality and sedimentation in the tributaries and in the main stem of Squaw Creek. So we've hired Mike Tidman, a young man who's working on developing that management authority, and I think you probably received letters for invitation to attend a meeting this Thursday to all the stakeholders in those counties and towns. So we're looking forward to that meeting. That'll be at Prairie Moon Winery. So if you can come to that, you're welcome. Other things that are happening in the our budget for the past year has been hovering right around $300,000, and we've got several projects going, including a grant from the Iowa DOT to develop the promotional material behind the Lincoln Highway Heritage Byway, which is it's a national program. It goes all the way across from New York to San Francisco. And in 2013, there will be the 100th anniversary of the Lincoln Highway. And there's a lot of planning going into effect on a national basis. There's supposed to be an antique car tour that will start both in San Francisco and New York simultaneously and cross the country. And there's already 100 cars have signed up for that tour already from New York alone. So we think that that's going to be a big event for Story County and Iowa. And we're involved with that. We've got a full-time person hired to help on that. We are also developing some products that we can sell to bring in a source of revenue for the Prairie Rivers, and one of those is the sale of logs, oak logs, to build cabins on county parks. And Mike Brandrup, who is a former division chief of the Iowa DNR's Forest Division, is our employee who's working on that. And so that's an exciting. We think we've got an order right now for five cabins in Hamilton County, and we think that this can grow even bigger. Be glad to answer any questions.
No question, but just I would be remiss if I didn't acknowledge on behalf of the Board of Supervisors and also the Story Conservation Board that I have served on in the past and just recently this year, will not be a voting member, but will continue to be a member attending the meetings. And I think that your work in soil conservation and Prairie Rivers RC&D is certainly very valuable, and the relationship that the Conservation Board had with Iowa State over the last few years, the monitoring of the Hickory Grove watershed, have been vital in us being in a position to be able to receive the assistance that is very much needed. So I would just want to convey our continual appreciation for your strong advocacy and commitment in this area, and it is certainly very much noted and appreciated. Question two is that as federal legislations are coming down the pike and so forth, I serve on the National Association of Counties Environmental, Energy, and Land Use Steering Committee, and last year was my first meeting when I was out in D.C., and obviously practically all of the major land use legislations and so forth seem to generate around the Gulf regions, the Pacific, East Coast, or West Coast, and they fail to recognize that a lot of those things, when it comes to water quality and other types of runoffs and impervious services, don't really apply to Iowa. And we need to constantly have people monitoring, you know, that type of legislation so that at least our congressional delegation representing us can be mindful of harmful impacts to things that we think would be harmful here in the state. So if you are aware of some legislation coming down the pike or something that I can share, I will be out there again in March at the National Association of Counties, and we'll have a two-day meeting on environmental, energy, and land use issues. So I'll be certainly willing to convey concerns not only from conservation districts, but anything that relates to the impact of some of the legislation that's coming down at the federal level that will impact how we do business here in the state of Iowa. So appreciate that.
Okay. Good.
So, with that, if there are no further questions, thank you. Look forward to seeing you again this time next year. Okay? Thank you. Okay. MacTeam, Deb, Gayla?
Good. Thank you.
If I get really close, okay. And I'm not supposed to push any buttons this time? Okay.
Good morning. Gayla and I are here this morning to report on our strategic plan for mental health and disability services for the first half of fiscal year 12, July through December. And before we jump into this, I want to tell you a little bit about what's going on at the State House. One of the provisions within the Iowa Code is that counties create a three-year strategic plan, which is what we're reporting on. And by June of this year, the strategic plan will have ended. And so typically we're working on a new plan at this point in time that has to be approved by the board and then submitted to DHS by April 1st. Because of the efforts going on with redesign, there were several of us through the community services affiliate through ISAC that talked with some legislators and members of the legislative service agency about our concerns with doing another strategic plan when there are so many unknowns out there. So one of the things that legislators are going to work on is creating a bill that would extend or amend our current plan, but wouldn't require counties to jump into a whole new three-year plan since redesign is going on. So that is happening. They're looking at legislation right now to just change that part of the code. If we do have an amendment or we do require an extension, we will have to do a public hearing for that. So just wanted to give you a heads up on that. That should probably be coming in the next probably 4 to 6 weeks so we can meet that part of the criteria for our strategic plan. Okay, during the reporting period, we had three appeals that were filed with our office from consumers, and all three were resolved at our reconsideration stage. And our service provider contracts held steady at about 65, and that would be agencies inside and outside of Story County that we work with. Our first goal is that McTeam will work on evaluating the service delivery system for methods and opportunities to stabilize and maximize our funding for the services that are covered in our plan. And the progress on that is, and we've talked about this before, in the last legislative session, the legislature had repealed Senate File 69, which outlines the county's levying ability for MHDD services, and it also repeals the CPC process. Legislature had also passed a bill to assemble work groups to work on redesign. And Gayla and I and staff were able to attend interim committee meetings this last 6 months that have to do with redesign, and we reported at several of those as far as core services. I was on the judicial work group that talked about court-related kinds of services, and those kinds of recommendations came out in the DHS report. So we spent a lot of time since July working and trying to keep our information flowing to that interim committee and finding out what was going on there and understanding their report. Additionally, in August, community services staff met with ISU students who are majoring in criminal justice services and other human services and talked with them a little bit about what the county's role was in mental health and developmental disability services. So if they're needing internships or looking at employment down the road, it could be a sector of the system that they would want to consider. Community Life Program and the Board of Supervisors met with to discuss mental health redesign and included Representative Deo in those discussions and what the implications might be. In September, McTeam met with Representative Heddens and discussed redesign and the future of disability services in Story County. Community Life Program staff met with Mary Greeley in October to discuss redesign services and the future of services here in the county. They also met with the Adult Mental Health Redesign Committee and presented a residential care facility provider fact sheet. One of the residential care facility providers in the state put together the list of those kinds of facilities that are available and the types of consumers served in those facilities statewide and how those services are funded. I believe there's over 2,000 individuals statewide that live in residential care facilities of various sizes, as small as the 8-bed group homes that Community Life operates, up to some residential care facilities still have over 50 beds. So we're talking a pretty wide range of facilities. Also in October, Community Life and Community Services staff met with the Ames Noon Rotary Group and talked about disability services and how those are provided and funded and again, what redesign was looking like. In November, Community Life staff met with Betty Bocella from RSVP to talk about disseminating emergency response information to people with disabilities, again, to help prepare and plan for disasters. In February, the first event is planned to get that information out to individuals. And Story County staff continued to work with Red Cross, Homeward, and other stakeholders on planning for a special needs shelter in the event of a disaster. We're meeting again next week, I believe it is, and hopefully we're at a point to have that plan developed and ready to go. The second part of that first goal is that we would continue to evaluate service authorizations and utilizations on a semi-annually basis for folks using our services. And we continue to do that on an ongoing basis. We've just incorporated that as part of our ongoing work, actually each month as we receive claims and approve claims for payment. By June of 30th of 2011, three consumers will be assisted in moving from institutional care to community-based services by accessing funding through a state program called Money Follows the Person. We actually met that goal by having two people move out into waiver homes here in the Ames community. They moved out from Woodward and Glenwood Resource Centers. Do you want me to go with goal two?
New goal two if you want. The second goal is that we would continue supporting a service system that addresses the needs of consumers with mental health, substance abuse, and correction issues. And the first aspect of that is that we would identify and share education regarding best practices for this service. And Deb already kind of covered some of the things that we've done as part of that. Information is always shared about what's going on and what direction we think we need to be going. Also, Community Services was selected to be a member of the Judicial Work Group for the Disability System Redesign, and there was a lot of talk given at that in that meeting to jail diversion services, and it's become a core service at this point. No word on how they're going to fund it, just that it's been identified. Okay, don't want to confuse anyone. The second part of that is that the judicial system, the Mental Health Criminal Justice Task Force, would meet a minimum of one time per quarter and to continue to address the needs that this population has. And we did that. We met in August and November. Also in October, the Sheriff's Office received a report from a feasibility study because they were considering possibly including mental health services as a component of the jail services. And as a result of the feasibility study, that wasn't seen as being a good direction to go. And so that's been suspended at this time, and we're trying to find other ways to make sure that those persons get the medical support, psychiatric support that they need. We also are going to partner with groups who are seeking to utilize grant funds and other new monies to support this area. And we met with the Crisis Service Subcommittee met on July 18th with Zia Partners. Zia Partners is a group out of California that is comprised of Drs. Minkoff and Klein. And they met and tried to help us come up with some really low-cost ways to maybe reposition our resources within the community to address the after-hours crisis needs. And one of the things that we came up with was that perhaps the Richmond Center's protocol, which is their 24-hour or their after-hours on-call system, could be utilized to interface with dispatch. Thank you. I was thinking booking. Dispatch. And so we posed that question to the Richmond Center, and we think that can happen. We haven't heard back concretely if that would actually work, but that would be a way to utilize some of our already existing services and supports that we have. In November, jail diversion was approved by the Story County Board of Supervisors as a service that's recognized by the MHDD management plan, McTeams plan that Deb was just talking about. And other jail diversion programs from around the state continue to meet, and we participate in that. And the thing that we're really trying to focus on in those gatherings is how to collect accurate and consistent data so that we can put forth concretely what are the real outcomes, what are the benefits, what are the costs to providing this kind of service. And everybody is collecting data in a very different kind of a way, and so in order to have a uniform look at this program, there needs to be uniform data collection. So we continue to work at that. The third goal is that we would continue to work with providers and businesses throughout the county to educate, promote, and support community employment for persons with all sorts of disabilities. And there's a listing here of the different kinds of events that we've hosted, and they'll also be covered in Community Life's report as well. we contacted a total of 16 new employers during this reporting period. And also during this time, Mainstream Living discontinued their supported employment services in Story County. And at this point, we still have four referrals that have come to us who are waiting to be processed and brought in for that. But we've been able to pick up those folks from Mainstream and hopefully be able to continue, help them continue their employment if it was already secured and to gain employment.
Why did Mainstream stop?
The person who was the director of their services took the position as the ARC director. And I think that internally they just opted to only stay with their supported employment program here in Story County was relatively small. And so they opted to stay with doing the enclave business that they do. And I'm not sure what else they have from an employment. That's the basic thing of it. But it made more sense to them to pass that on. And so at this point, Community Life Program is the supported employment provider for our area. So that's our report in a quick nutshell.
Okay.
Do you have any
comments
questions?
Or questions for Deb and Gayla? Good. Thank you again for updating us on the progress and what's going on. We certainly recognize that will be ongoing challenges to provide the needed services to the clients in our county, so we appreciate both of you and all of the work that you do. Good. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, moving on. Departmental report, CLP.
Oh!
Gayla, you're back.
We're back. I know that we forwarded to you electronically a copy of this report, but we're giving you a new one because we actually got a few more reports done and clipped them to the back so that we, and we'll review those. That includes the technology plan, the accessibility plan, and the risk management plan.
Ooh.
So we were able to get that done and make that also part of our presentation to you this morning. So you have a little bonus added on to what you got from us electronically. I'm going to have Ron briefly review the fourth quarter report for CLP, so take it away.
Hello. As you can see, this is quite lengthy, so I plan to just kind of hit the highlights, but if you have any questions about anything, feel free to stop me. So this is a fourth quarter report, and currently we're serving 179 people. And that's unduplicated people. So we all have several different programs, but that's an unduplicated number. Right now, we're also working to establish criteria for identifying co-occurring disabilities in persons with receiving services. And one of the ways that we're doing that is we implemented a new documentation system called CLIP. We're working to get that up and going, and right now we're looking at February 1st as our go-live date with that. And with that system, we should be able to identify folks much easier with different diagnoses. We're going to use a screening tool called MIDAS, and we've also implemented work groups to give input into our management system. We've created a new vision statement through that process. We've also worked on our referral process and our admission process to make it more user-friendly. We've also added weekend activities for people who need a place to socialize on the weekends. We've also discovered that our people must be pretty busy on the weekends because we didn't have a whole lot of numbers showing up on the weekends for those activities and have decided to just go with activities that we know people have shown interest in. So we don't have anything scheduled every weekend anymore because we just didn't have the numbers. So moving on, one of our goals was to increase the number of people that we serve by 5%. Per year through 2013. In this first year, we increased by 4.1% over our baseline of 172 people. So we're clearly on target for meeting that objective. Gail has been working with Ryan and Givens to develop billing oversight procedures. I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
We just experienced our first cost reporting season, if you will, with Ryan Givens, and it was very labor intense for them to get the information from us to be able to put into their system. I am really hopeful that next year will be much easier for us, since now they have the framework that and kind of understand how we do our system, and it can be picked up. But we just went to a cost reporting seminar that they did last week and also got some more input on the types of things that they'd like us to collect from a data standpoint in order to make the best use of our cost reporting for our cost recoupment.
Looking at the vocational side of our program, currently our average wage for the people who are employed is $8.95 an hour. Our goal is $9, so we've slipped a little bit under that, but we're pretty close. During this quarter, we contacted 10 new employers, and our folks are working an average of 17.3 hours a month, or a week, sorry. And that's also down a little bit from the beginning of the year, but I think the economy has a lot to do with that. 63% of our consumers are employed.
That number is also impacted by the people that we brought on referral-wise from Mainstream, that now we have more people in the system waiting to get jobs. So that number also reflects that.
Our number of participants in the COIL program is up to 25.9. Our goal is 22, so we've surpassed that. We've provided 11,540 hours of billable service during 2011, which was above our goal of 11,250. It also represents a 31% increase since 2008, which is significant. Let's see. And I think that's the end of my part of the report, if you wanted to do the technology plan.
Sure, and you can see the demographic things that went on. So if you want to flip to the back part of your packet, technology-wise, I think Ron hit on this a little bit. We're already moving ahead with really getting the CLIP program to be able to work for us in the way that we want. We were excited about this because it's web-based, and so there's remote access. Previous to this, everybody who was using a laptop would have to bring them in, replicate it. We'd have to do this swap. So we're really excited about getting that up and going and on board. Story County is working right now on creating a new website for all departments to use, and we're hoping to be able to take advantage of that. Another thing that we had for technology was that we wanted to have our training be online. So again, the people who are remote wouldn't have to come in for all the continuing ed that we have to provide for folks. So we signed on with a company called CE Solutions, and a lot of our in-service training is now being able to be done through the computer. And that means that's a cost savings to us, although the service cost, that's a cost savings to us because now we don't have to have people come into the main building and then cover their sites, which always generated overtime. So I think it's going to be cost effective. They use a pre- and post-test model, so there's some efficacy, you know, some accountability built into that system so that we have something to point to saying you were given this training and you demonstrated competency and so on. So we're pretty excited about it. I think that it might have implications that the rest of the county, I'll be talking to Alyssa about some of the things that we're able to do on that that may be useful for, you know, further application. We were hoping to standardize all of our programs and applications, again working with Alyssa on the HR aspect of this through the technology, and are excited about maybe getting that be all able to be done electronically. So let's move to the accessibility plan. I've attached a sheet on the back of how many educational opportunities and programs that we've done. We hope to do 5 each year, and we need to raise our bar on that. We totally go above and beyond that. So We try to create as many opportunities as we can to talk about what we do and how to benefit our clientele. 20 new people will be served with co-occurring diagnoses. As Ron mentioned, we're doing our part to try to be able to identify the people that we know already that we have in our system who have co-occurring disabilities and the capacity to deal with the kinds of challenges that they pose. So we're working on that. We're always working, as Deb and I talked about, of trying to secure and stabilize the funding that comes into the system. And so there was a great deal of work this last year on meeting with legislators and talking about the ramifications of redesign, the concept of unintended consequences. Let's see. Ron also alluded to the Medicaid billing, our billable units, and the increase that we've been able to realize in that. And I have to give credit to our frontline supervisors who really took the ball in their hands, because we were offering internal training on how to do documentation, and that had some good results. But what really made a difference was for them to go out and hand over hand do training with their staff. We have almost a zero rejection rate at those staff sites now, which is a heck of a change from where we were at before. So we're really, really excited about that. One of our other goals was to replace some of our vehicles with fuel-efficient cars. We were able to do that through some of the MHDD dollars that came to us sort of unexpectedly last year, so we met that goal. And we continue to have our safety committee meet and assess our properties and work with facilities. And also we were able to do a good deal of improvements to our infrastructure this last year that we've had to postpone because of lack of funds. So we feel really good about being able to write that in here this time, that instead of just saying that we know what they are, we were able to address a good many. So that is super. We continue to evaluate our budget for the feasibility of making future changes, and so we have a list already starting of what it is that we may need to be working on for the future. Risk management plan is the last part of this, and we pretty much take this off of our SWOT process that we do. And I won't get into having us review all of that. You can read that. But primarily, the areas that we focused on are the instability of the funding that we have, how we position ourselves best, what we do if our mental health services are not available, how do we make sure that our clients get the services they need, how do we make sure that we're in as strong a position as we can be to provide those services. So those sorts of things are covered in that, and it's kind of a paragraph sort of a document. So please, you know, feel free to read through that and let us know if there's any questions that you might have. But I think pretty much everything that we've discussed up to this point in the plan has been covered, and then it's tied together as part of our addressing the risks. So. That's what we have.
Thank you, Gayla and Ron. Very extensive report, and very much appreciated all the work that goes into providing this service. So appreciate it.
Sounds to me like we've got ourselves in as solid a position foundationally as we can be to deal with the challenges that are coming, both known and unknown, here over the next few years.
It's the unknown. One of the things that I wanted to mention that we do know is that our CARF accreditation survey is going to be February 23rd and 24th, and I'll be contacting you to be able to participate in that, both from an introductory meeting and for the exit. So I'll send you an email soon. I don't know what their agenda looks like at this point, and it's kind of a different way that they're doing it. In the past, we've always had two surveyors for 3 days. This time we have three surveyors, 2 days. So I think it'll be a little different construct. But I'll be getting back with you all with that.
Thank you. Okay. All right, moving on to planning and zoning, planning and development. Oh, shucks. I had that all ready to go. And just had to throw it in. And then we, as soon as that happened, we'll take just a couple-minute break and before we move on.
Good morning.
Hello there. You can go ahead and get started. He'll be back in just a minute.
What we've handed out, thanks to Charlie, is our annual report for 2011. I'm going to just give you some brief highlights of it, and then I have a few items, questions for you on current pending items. The annual report was done in-house, printed in-house, et cetera. Just starting out with permits and applications, from 2010 to 2011, there was little change in permit activity. In 1 year, there was 99. The other year, 100 total permits issued. While that was consistent, the types of permits that were issued did vary. And in the following areas, accessory buildings, attached garages, advertising, communication towers, and decks, they were consistent across the board. But in 2011, we issued more permits for co-location of cell towers, commercial permits, and CUX, and single-family dwellings. You'll see that when we get to the valuations. There is a substantial change in valuations despite the lack of change in numbers for the 2 years. In 2011, 15 new houses were constructed in Story County, or at least construction was permitted. This is through either agricultural exemptions or zoning permits. The valuation last year, calendar year, was $230,491.90. Total valuations for all permits issued, and this does not include agricultural exemptions. This is just zoning permits that were granted. In 2011 was just under $23 million in comparison to the year prior, which was under $10 million. That reflects the commercial wind turbines that were constructed in a couple large commercial developments. Single family dwellings did increase in valuation over the two calendar years from $226,000 to $230,490, as I said earlier, in 2011. This figure and on the screen, as well as the following table, are in the annual report. It just again shows the consistency of the past two years with the more permits issued for CUX 1 year versus the other, and then single family dwellings more in 2010. Going on to E911 addressing, property research, and home business permit, in 2011, we did issue a lot more E911 addresses, but bear in mind that last year the board approved the use of local option sales tax to assign addresses to cemeteries and parks in Story County, so that is reflective of that. So even with that, the total, and this is as best Charlie does pretty detailed, but so there are some things that may fall through. 92 in 2011, in 2010, 90. We issued in 2010, 2011, both years, we processed 20 property research requests. That was up from the high in 2000, or down from the high in 2007 of 42. When the recession hit, we did expect to see a decrease in that. We did in 2008 to 25 requests. That went back up in 2009 to 36, and now we are holding steady at 20. It's been an interesting fluctuation over the past few years. Stepping back, I do want to share the agricultural exemptions that were granted the past 2 years. In 2010, we issued 40. That increased substantially in 2011 to 59. The valuations for both held around $4 million, so tack that onto the other valuations that were for zoning permits. Three new home business permits were granted in 2011, along with the four that we issued in 2010. That means right now we have 71 active home business permits in unincorporated Story County. Some just quick things on administration organizations. Probably the funnest thing for us right now is the name change, as Wayne alluded to. You call, I'm one out of every four times saying planning and development. This is Leanne. After 13 years of saying planning and zoning, it's a change. It's a very positive change that we're going forward into 2012 with. You did take that action in November of last year to officially change our name of our department. We also encountered staff changes in 2011, starting out with our office coordinator resigning and then bringing a new office coordinator on board. And then our code enforcement officer resigned in October, and currently we're at four full-time employees, looking how we go forward with some restructuring plans, and we'll get to that with CPAT here shortly. We entered into a pilot project from April to October, extending our office hours. Our numbers weren't as great initially as we'd hoped, but we served about 20 people calling in. We didn't keep very detailed. This is kind of recollection, too, and we tried to, but as time went on, we'd forget, oh, yeah, 10 people called or 2 people called or approximately 5 to 10 people stopped in. Did do some out-of-normal office hours inspections. As the pilot went on, September, October, the frequency of usage increased substantially, though. That's when we saw it happen. So I'd like to talk to the board when we get my next report about doing that again this year and seeing how valuable that is as a service to Story County. We continue working on going paperless. Files dating back to 1958 means a lot of quality control. We brought temporary staff on board in May. We have one member still of that staff, and we're on the downward end. We're now into the regulations aspect. Office organization just really found ways to improve our efficiency and streamline to best we could. Simple things like using our label maker to the best of its ability. Outreach was a lot of different things. We had the wind farm tour with Johnson County officials in August of 2011. Did several staff presentations throughout Story County and other areas, February, March, and September. I think there are a couple more in there that I just failed to write down as the year went on. A lot on floodplain, a lot on what is planning to our local elementary schools. Floodplain management started out in March, or February, excuse me, with our CAV, our community assistance visit from Iowa DNR and FEMA. Very positively, had very positive feedback from both those entities on our floodplain management program. We were successful with our CAV, so we are still a participant in the National Flood Insurance Program. I served as secretary to IFSMA, Iowa Floodplain Stormwater Management Association. In record time, we went from association to chapter status. And we also now have over 100 members. The Board of Supervisors appointed me to work with Ames and Iowa State, the Flood Task Force, following the 2010 flooding. So we had several meetings of that. And then we continue to monitor and look forward to the new mapping that's coming out through the Iowa Flood Center and the Iowa DNR. Right now, on the mapping sequence, which is a pretty colored picture of Iowa on the screen, we're in 2012 that the new floodplain maps will start to be developed for Story County. When you look at the permits for 2011 to 2012 for floodplain management, you take a step back and say, well, it was double. It was 23 in 2010, 46 in 2011. We had 23 drainage ditch permits issued. That was for the Milford project. That's why the doubling. It did increase our review time and our permits issued, but it's not what the numbers say. Continual outreach. In October, you proclaimed it Community Planning Month, as you do annually, and we had Box City Festival from really February last year till May. The culmination of that with the Tiny Town public open house May 12th. Long-range planning and special projects, we did everything. A lot of these are still going on. 35-acre review, looked at revising our development review procedures to streamline those. The culmination of the Ames River Fringe with the implementation adopted by all entities in July with the 28E agreement. Community planning assistance team that Charlie will talk about. Local foods and farm with strategic planning approved in October of last year, and our ordinance review project that we brought to the board in July. Inspections and enforcement. In 2011, we estimated we did 91 inspections last year, with the high months of September and October, I believe. No, June and October. kind of up and down fluctuation. I said estimated because we may not always have put them in our calendars too. Going back annually and looking at that, so definitely around 100. With 33 total enforcement cases open and closed, or opened, 11 that have been closed out, and 10 that remain open, with 23 that achieve voluntary compliance through that process too. Boards and commissions, as you know, we provide staff support to you all, the Board of Adjustment and Planning and Zoning Commission. Last year, you appointed Dave Miller to the Board of Adjustment, Dave Weigel and Nancy Kalzer to the Planning and Zoning Commission, and Gene Sheets as well to fill an unexpired term till the end of last year. In May of last year, we had training on land use matters provided by Iowa State Extension. We opened up to other entities. Hopefully, we'll do that again this year, too, this spring. And then in December, we developed fact sheets for the Board of Adjustment, Planning and Zoning Commission. In 2011, before you all, we brought 25 resolutions, 2 ordinances, 30 additional items, and work session items, and 20 departmental reports. In regards to the Planning and Zoning Commission, they met 8 times in 2011, considered 18 items for action and recommendation. And the Board of Adjustment, on their part, met 5 times and considered 9 items for action. Government Restructuring Committee was appointed by you in May last year. We are the department that serves the Government Restructuring Committee. They had 4 official meetings in August, September, and 2 in December. And then in addition to that, they did tour county facilities with Al Hahn in September. AICP certification, Charlie, and again, congratulations to him, on May 16th of last year, did become AICP certified, so that's fabulous to have 2 AICP planners on staff. We continue to work on our NIMS, National Incident Management Systems. All of us are now certified in 100, 200, 700, and 775, and a couple of us do have 800. And then floodplain management, doing in-house opportunities, and then hosting some as well with the Iowa DNR. And our mission statement up there has been in effect since 2000. It's something we'll be looking at. It's to protect and enhance the Story County public health, safety, and general welfare by effectively planning and regulating the built environment and sustaining resources while balancing the rights of our citizens with the public good. We'll just evaluate whether that's still in effect and bring it forward for discussion with the commission and probably you all in February. Just a couple of upcoming items. Tonight is the meeting of the Government Restructuring Committee. Thank you, Shelley. They're going out doing public input sessions throughout the county. They've had 3 so far. The attendance has been low. I think everyone's a little bit disappointed by that. But we also haven't had the best weather either, and some other conflicts with the school calendars, you name it. It's January.
We should think about serving food.
That would be within the board's budget to.
No, I think we'd have to scrape and put it up ourselves, but I agree. We still got a couple out there that hopefully we'll pick up with some attendance.
We do have in February the rescheduling and zeroing at the Dakins Community Center. The one that was scheduled for next Monday, January 30th, in Ames has been rescheduled. We have a board member that has to have medical procedure, so we're rescheduling that. Date yet to be determined. It's probably going to be the end of February when we work with work sessions with Council Ames. On February 10th, the Government Restructuring Committee is basically holding Fort down in this building. They'll be meeting with county staff members. Open invitation to all county staff members can meet with them in the assessor's conference room. And then they'll be meeting with you all over the lunch hour to get your input. And then former board members in the afternoon in this room right here. So again, they'll be here. I have a feeling they may be coming forward to you to see if there's some possibility of extending out that June deadline, just given the fact that we're having some troubles getting meetings accomplished for the public outreach session. So just putting that in your bugging ear on that. Do you have any questions?
But a compliment. Leanne, in all my years of serving, this little book that you put together on the annual report is one of the most comprehensive things. And I was following you going through This is very impressive. I want to thank you and staff, whoever was responsible. Do we have enough of these to put in each of the libraries and throughout the county?
We print them in-house, and so we can print as many as we need to. We could. I can send them.
Yeah, I really think this document, it's the way it's so concise, and it really covers all the activities and the various things that you've done. I think people would find it easy to read, and if they wanted extra copies, maybe we could have a revenue source and figure out a way to charge them for that. But, I mean, this is outstanding. I think you really should feel good about what you put together, and I would encourage any others to take a chance to look at this document that you put forth here. This, you and your staff should be commended for that. Thank you.
Thanks. See you again in a minute.
Yep. Okay, moving on, liaison, anything, Paul, Rick?
Pass.
I will pass as well. Lisa, I'm going to let you go ahead, and we'll take just a short break right before we get ready
ahead.
For the next part.
Take a break.
Okay, well, let me give me 2 minutes.
I'm going to...
Okay. We will... reconvene the board session, and Lisa Markley with quarterly financial report.
I guess it's still morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
I would like to, I provided the quarterly financial report for you there. I'd like to note a couple things. It was 50% of the year, obviously, in December for our fiscal year. We have the expenditures on the first page of the 24 departments, 8 of those are over the 50% mark. There are not a lot, and those that are over the 80% mark have been appropriated 100%. So did I say 80%? I meant 50%. overall, we're at 47.7% of the total expenditures of the budget. The fund balances is the top of the second page. Note that I did put a little loan notification there that there's a loan from the general fund to the mental health fund. You guys approved up to $1.5 million. We've only advanced $1 million at this point. However, it appears to me, unless some money comes from the state within the next week, we're going to have to send some more over to the mental health fund in order to have a positive ending fund balance for January.
Have you heard anything at all?
I haven't.
And that.
Deb and I are just basically watching our emails to see if there's any notification of saying we've sent the checks. Typically the last week in January is when they send them, and if that's the case, it may not be here by January 31st, so I'll have the treasurer move some more money to make it through the end of January. the revenues of the 20 departments listed there, 13 are over the 50% mark. However, that only gives us 48.8 overall. The ones that are over the mark are not large amounts of revenues. So,
well, again, it goes back to mental health.
Correct.
I mean, it's those dollars that are.
Couple things. As I noted earlier, we've appropriated 95% of the budget for most departments at this point in time. When we've been working through the budget process, one of the things that I was asked to look at was if we only appropriate salary related items and not the rest of the dollars, how much money would that leave in the general fund? That would leave about $250,000 in the general fund. Okay, so that is an option. I have not thought about discuss when we're going to finish the appropriation process, but as far as I'm concerned, we're pretty good there. We don't have to hurry into that at this point. But keep that in mind that there's $250,000 in the general fund that would, if we don't appropriate, that are not salary-related items. The other funds are irrelevant because they're mainly salary. I am working on a budget amendment because we're working through the budget process, so surely we should be doing amendment also, right? I'm working on a budget amendment. I'm hoping to bring that send it out for public hearing to have on February 14th at the board meeting.
Happy Valentine's Day.
No guarantees on that, but that's what I'm shooting for at this point in time. Okay? Any questions?
No. Just, again, do a good job of keeping us informed, and I think that in spite of not receiving the information from the state at this time regarding the mental health area, we have probably projected as well as we could, and we're in better position than many areas around the state. So, again, compliment to not only you, but the department heads that manage those departments as well. So, appreciate that.
Are we all on the same page on IRBM? I mean, I know a lot of that has to do with some of the things we did in the drainage districts, but I felt like we had directed that there be a move made, and I'm not completely convinced that's happened.
I emailed Joe late Friday after I talked to you guys, and my that's what I said. This is where we're at. I do know that the amendment I'm going to bring forward is going to include IRVM because of a state grant. So I don't have any intention at this point of amending additional dollars necessarily. There may be some drainage district revenues that we can amend in to help us out a little bit.
Well, if I was following that email, my understanding, I thought, is that we were not intending for that to be continued.
Correct.
Yes.
And that's what all of
us... That's a temporary position.
That's what all
later
of us...
Later on, be picked up later. Yeah.
Right. That's what all of us
Great.
Were of the understanding.
Great.
So I guess I'll follow up on that today, too, to make sure.
Good idea.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. All righty, then moving on, we've been waiting for a long time. Discussion of the final report entitled A Strategic Story, A Framework for Story County Economic Development, written by the American Planning Association team and Charlie, Leanne, and welcome to members of the audience that have played a key role and as stakeholders and interested people during that process. So we appreciate you being here to hear this report this morning.
You didn't bring a copy of it for all of us?
Ran out of paper.
I've been waiting. I'm using that color copy you've got.
Yeah, I wanted that color copy, but this is fine. No, just kidding. Often read it last night.
Well, hopefully you've all gotten a chance to at least review the report somewhat. My intention with the presentation here is I'm going to just kind of go through each of the 20 or so recommendations that they made, kind of discuss them a little bit and talk about the time frame that they've associated with those recommendations as well. So anytime while I'm presenting, if you have a question about anything that I'm talking about at that time, feel free to interrupt me and we'll discuss it. So. Quick, just going through the timeline, and I'm sure you're aware of all this, but about a year ago, the Board of Supervisors decided to explore ways to become more actively involved in the economic development of Story County, even above and beyond what you were currently doing prior to that time and currently. With that, in February of 2011, Leanne came to you with the American Planning Association's Community Planning Assistant Team Initiative, and asked if the boards would like to pursue that, and at that time you directed us to apply for it, and we did. And obviously we're awarded that opportunity. Fast forward a little bit to September of last year. That's kind of when the nitty-gritty of the CPET really did kick off. At that point, the team leader, Wayne Fiden, and an APA staff member, and Thomas Bassett, traveled to Story County for that preliminary visit. During that visit, we toured every single city in the county, just kind of drove through some of the key areas in those cities. There was meeting with the Board of Supervisors and focus groups with the key stakeholders in the county. After that, about a month later, in between the time where we really kind of narrowed down exactly what we were trying to accomplish with this CPAT, the full team did arrive in October, late October. And again, there was tour, focus group meetings, public meetings, and a final presentation. So with that, the Story County CPAT did recognize that economic development and quality of life are interwoven together. They did state that the business location and expansion decisions are based on financial feasibility, but also quality of life is often a major part of those final decisions. They did include a walkable downtown, urban amenities, cultural activities, safety, recreation, aesthetics, clean air and water, shared economic benefits, local food, ag preservation, education, and most importantly, a strong sense of place. The report does go on to say any economic development strategy in Story County should reflect on the quality of life in addition to providing jobs, economic activity, and an improved tax base. With that, the Story County CPAD did recommend strategic efforts and investment in four broad areas to support improved economic development and quality of life. Those four areas include vision and long-range planning, strategic partnerships and investments, trails, recreation, and other quality of life issues, and the last being county planning organization. Starting in, just kind of going to go through all the recommendations now. You'll see on the top there kind of each of those four areas that we'll go through. First few slides will be the vision and long-range planning. But one of the first recommendations that came out of it was a community visioning process. Such a process would be where a community defines the future they would like to see, and it's citizen-led. It would provide a foundation which to build a long-range plan and focus on the areas where there is disagreement or unclear direction amongst the different jurisdictions in the county. And the time frame they associated with kicking this off would be a quick time frame, which they refer to as a six-month process. The next one would be considering a long-range plan. Following the development of the community vision to incorporate existing plans and strategies such as the local foods plan, the climate change initiative, and hazard mitigation with an overall framework for growth and development of Story County. They did point out that general areas of a long-range plan do include land use and growth opportunities, downtown revitalization, business retention and expansion, ag preservation, housing and historic preservation, transportation and public works, food systems and public health, parks, trails and recreation, and natural resources and hazard mitigation. The time frame associated with that would be what they consider medium, and that's 1 to 4 years. Moving on to the second area, which was strategic partnerships and investment. This is where a majority of the recommendations do come from. First would just be some partnerships that the county should look and getting involved in, offer service to economic development organizations and chambers, boards, and committees. That would be a quick time frame, again, 6 months. Secondly, develop an outreach program and develop those relationships with some non-traditional partners such as the Farm Bureau, Story County Community Foundation, and others. And again, the time frame associated with that was quick to short, sometime between 6 months and 1 year. Economic gardening, and that's a term that is meant to develop a comprehensive outreach program to begin building bonds between government and local entrepreneurs and businesses. Economic gardening, the model does state that the strongest potential for job and economic advancement is in growing local entrepreneurs as opposed to recruiting businesses from an outside area, which is typically referred to as economic hunting. Time frame to start a program such as that would be a medium 1 to 4 years. Looking into some focus leadership, they recommended to audit existing policies, plans, and budgeting processes and modify where necessary to meet the ideals of the vision that is being sought, and to adjust those policies to align with the community of vision and the city agreements that would come out of the community visioning process. And that time frame was 1 to 4 years. They did talk about investments in infrastructure, and they did suggest a three-pronged approach to infrastructure investments that encourages economic development. Those three prongs would include to maximize existing infrastructure capacity, coordinate public investments with a focused growth plan, and leverage new spending by pooling resources with other governments and private sector investments. They recommended that we also do a land inventory, and that would be where the county and partners would create an overall inventory of underused and vacant industrial and commercial land. To do that, we'd identify sites that that already receive infrastructure investment, as well as those that can receive extended services both quickly and economically. Time frame to do that would be within 1 year. Another one of their recommendations was growing in versus growing out, and to accomplish that, doing some zoning audits for the zoning codes of the county and all the cities within the county. Some of the things to look at when doing those zoning audits would be to ensure parking requirements are not precluding private investment and they closely reflect actual parking demands. Second, to see if mixed-use developments are allowed within the main commercial areas of the cities. And the time frame on that was a 1 to 4 years. With that, they did note infill development and in partnership with the cities to rethink what constitutes potential development sites within currently served areas. Again, they talk about oversized parking lots, outdoor storage yards, and open grass spaces serving no landscaping or natural area function. Those areas should be reviewed as potential infill sites for development. And, again, inventorying those sites should take somewhere around 1 year, according to their recommendation. Working with the Iowa State University Research Park and work with Ames and both the Research Park to explore in-town opportunities for future expansion in addition to considering infill opportunities in the current Research Park. They did note that currently some uses in the Research Park could fit into an urban office environment. And again, looking at that, they suggested a time frame of 1 year on that. Looking at some of Story County's communities, the downtown and the facades of those buildings, they recommend the larger cities conduct facade studies at least for the larger commercial block of the community. They did note that downtowns represent social infrastructure and define image of economic health. The curb appeal, they did note that the curb appeal has decreased on many downtown buildings throughout the county. One of the recommendations to doing something like this was possibly to use the skills of the Iowa State architectural students to keep the costs low and engage local university students. Time frame suggested with that was 1 to 4 years. Even more so on the downtown facades, they suggested sponsoring a facade painting program for any downtown area that would take advantage of it. They did note that clean, fresh facades can make an enormous difference in the sense of place and local pride. They suggested to offer staff coordination and possibly pay for materials if and only if the volunteers came forward to do actual work on a significant amount of their downtown areas. Time frame on this was quick, and that's 6 months. Looking at possibly a suggestion for the county would be to look at a capital improvement program. They suggest that we work on a combined multi-year strategy for capital investments and infrastructure, something that reaches beyond the engineer's current five-year road plan. They suggested to create a criteria that aimed to address economic development goals in addition to traditional needs of health, safety, and welfare. Roads, parks, trails, open space, and utility systems provide that necessary foundation for economic growth. Time frame on this would be 1 to 4 years. They did suggest that we also look at a strategic investment plan, something that would be used as a method to formalize implementation of a vision. Especially growth opportunity areas. This would include coordinating the county capital improvement plan with planned city capital projects, utility plans, and other anticipated public investments. Time frame on this would be 1 to 5 plus years. Okay, getting out of that, moving on to the trails, recreation, and quality of life aspects of their recommendations. First, they did recommend that the county look at a trails slash recreation master plan. They did note that a network of trails that connect to the regional trail systems positions Story County as a recreational destination. They suggested that we look at bridging the gaps in existing trails and connect all cities in the county through a trail network. With that, to also consider tourism and alternative attractions and consider appointment of a trails commission. Time frame on that was a medium 1 to 4 years. They did touch on local foods and did note in the report that the Board of Supervisors did pass the local foods and farm strategic action steps on October 25th of 2011. With that, they did recommend continued efforts to include local foods in the broader economic development and long-range plans, as well as working with local farmers to support their efforts to sell and market their products to local consumers. They did touch on energy efficiency. I did note in there that Story County has taken many positive steps in this direction, but they did note with that adoption of building codes is instrumental in achieving energy efficiency. They noted that they include energy codes and have standards for windows, insulation, and other design and construction elements that are critical to energy performance. May also reduce insurance premiums for owners and provide assurance to buyers and sellers that the product they are buying and are selling is safe and efficient. Time frame to look into adoption of a building code would be 1 to 4 years. Did also suggest a unified marketing campaign to address energy efficiency for all residents and businesses, something that we could possibly partner with the city staffs, economic development organizations, Iowa State, and DMAC. To provide information about rebate and incentive programs and target existing buildings, new appliances, our equipment, and weatherization of buildings. Time frame for this would be 6 months to 4 years. Looking into renewable energy, again, they did commend the county on the efforts we've taken to promote renewable energy. But they did also suggest that we review county codes regarding wind and solar energy production, possibly revising the land development regulations to allow for the installation of wind energy conversion systems in residential and commercial areas to serve localized small-scale energy needs, as well as research opportunities for commercial solar fields and residential solar panels. And the time frame on this was a 6-month time frame. Getting in to their last area of recommendations, the county planning organization, step one, or their first recommendation, that was to provide assistance to local cities to coordinate and provide technical assistance where necessary. Some partnerships may be advisory or supportive, while others will require a more active role. The communities can leverage power for greater resources, and they did note that small municipalities, especially those with limited staff resources, would definitely benefit from something like this. The services could be expanded to include a full suite of planning and development services, GIS services, and infrastructure advisement. Looking at reorganization of our particular department, they did suggest renaming the Planning and Zoning Department to the Planning and Development Department. Obviously, that has already been done, so we have achieved that recommendation. But with that, and something that Leanne had brought up in her departmental report was we should develop a mission statement reflective of the modern responsibilities of our department. And again, the time frame on that would be a 6-month time frame. They did suggest some streamlining efforts that we explore. One of those suggestions was to merge the Zoning Board of Adjustment and the Planning and Zoning Commission. They did note that a reorganized body should also be renamed to reflect the departmental name change, and the time frame on this is 1 to 5 plus years. And real quick on that, and we did kind of ask around a little bit on the legal implications on that as far as some other things, and what they suggested with that merging of those two was more or less something that would make the process less erroneous on any customer that would come in. Not sure we fully understand what they were getting at on that, but I think we can maybe do some follow-up on that with them to kind of see what they were suggesting. Just with the different responsibilities that those two boards are governed with, we're not so sure if they would actually mingle coercively to actually get what we need out of them, I guess.
Well, I'm glad to hear you talk about the immediate follow-up. That was one of the areas when I read through it last night. I kept thinking because of the legislative structure and the way the Board of Adjustment and the appeal process takes place, that's beyond the Board of Supervisors. So how do you really effectively do that unless it's something that happens either at the state level that puts that in motion? But I think we're already talking internally about streamlining the processes and so forth. And so I can definitely see that as being a good way by which permits and different things that could be streamlined and made more effective and available, kind of a one-stop shop for that. And if we're able to implement that, then at least we would have started that process towards bringing those two entities together.
And, you know, from what we were able to gather, there might not be anything legally wrong with merging those two, although we'd have to look at some of our process. For example, with conditional use permits,
right,
we have our Planning and Zoning Commission provide a recommendation to the Board of Adjustment. So we'd obviously have to look at changing that because it really wouldn't make too much sense to stick with that. So other things, we'll follow up with them and kind of see what they're getting at that and maybe get some better feedback for you. But with that, and as you had mentioned, they did suggest a single point of contact for applicants, which would streamline the processes and make the processes more customer friendly. They did note that the person should have access to all related departments and review bodies and assist the customer throughout the process. And they also noted that this would ease customer apprehension with the process and would facilitate interdepartmental cooperation. Going on to the staffing needs that they recommended, they did recommend to add one full-time employee, which would be considered the economic development coordinator. This would support the increased economic development responsibilities and the steps recommended here in this report. The functions of a position like this would include the coordination of county economic development efforts, partnership development with cities and businesses, create and manage a strategic investment plan, support downtown revitalization efforts, support for small city planning and grant writing, and resource development for improvements that add the quality of life add to the quality of life in Story County. And this time frame was within 1 year. So looking at that, I can kind of go through, I just put together what the time frame summary to kind of give a little bit more of a understanding of it. And those quick time frames, those ones within 6 months that were recommended were the strategic economic development entity partnerships, the downtown facade painting programs, alternative energy code audits, and symbolic restructuring of the planning and development department now. Those within 1 year were to kick off and administer a community visioning and establish an outreach program. Again, within 1 year, the industrial/commercial land inventory, infill development strategy, the research park technical assistance, and the economic development coordinator position. Within 4 years, the energy efficiency/unified marketing campaign, the zoning audits, the county capital improvement program, and the establishment of county building codes. The time frame of 1 to 4 years included development of a community vision plan, the coordinated long-range plan and city agreements, the economic gardening program, the economic development audit of county policies and plans, the downtown facade architectural study, and the trails master plan. The one that goes 1 to 5 plus years included the strategic investment plan and the combination of the Zoning Commission and the Board of Adjustment. So with that, I guess I'll open it up for discussion, questions, wherever we want to go with this, and we'll go from there.
Well, let me take the first stab, and I'm sure my two colleagues may have something else to think about, but as I read through this last evening, I was of the opinion that perhaps working with you guys, with the Planning and Zoning Organization Department and the board, that we need to aggressively think about some type of strategic workshops where we set aside time that we can begin to look at some of the time frames that are there, but then to strategize how do we go about actually putting that into motion, taking the concept and then making it an actuality. And those things cannot happen unless we structure some blocks of time by which the board can sit down with you guys, and then we take off, we decide which topics we're going to deal with, and then work our way through it, and at the same time encouraging other stakeholders from the community that have participated in this process an opportunity to engage with us. But I think this is too important of a new initiative and that the county is embarking on, and for us to have invested this time to get the feedback, for us not to quickly move forward with some type of strategic planning mechanism so that we could then later on be able to document, yes, these are the things that we've now been able to accomplish. And I think that needs to happen sooner than pushing it further down the path. So what I would like my colleagues to agree to join me in is to have you give some thought to how you could come back to us and let us schedule some time, maybe a Wednesday or Thursday, 2.5 hour blocks or something, that we could actually begin to work through some of these proposals that are suggested here.
And if you look on the screen up there, actually, that was one thing that we had noted up here, was to recommend a work session with the board on doing.
It's going to take several.
Pretty much, yeah.
Right.
And with that, it's also going to take the cooperation of more than just our department within the county and more than just the county. It's going to need to probably include all the cities at some level as well, too. You know, there's a lot of groups out there and a lot of cooperation that would need to go together to pull something like this off, what they're recommending. So
I think you're both 100% right. But let me start with Leanne and Charlie. First of all, congratulations to you and your department. I mean, when you brought this forward to us as a possibility to do, I know I met it with some skepticism of where we were going to go and what we were going to get. I think that if this board truly wants to walk the walk of being more engaged in economic development, this is a great starting point for us to have the conversation. So congratulations and job well done. But I would point out two of the items that I believe that are on this list that we better focus on and focus on in a hurry if we're really going to take the rest of it seriously. And Charlie and Mark, I appreciate you guys being here because to me, you guys would play a key role in how far and fast this thing goes. The first item is the strategic partnerships. To me, we better address that item quick because everything else that's on this list is not as simple as the Board of Supervisors deciding right. We want to do it. It's that we've got to have the partnership. And Mark, with his leadership for the Story County Economic Development, is it council or commission or what is the group? What's the name of the group you lead? Okay, Story County Economic Development Group. Mark's the chair of that. I think we better get buy-in from that group first and foremost. And then obviously with Ames as our largest municipality, we better have buy-in from Ames for some of these things that we want to do. The second item that I think is key to this is discussion and decision on creating this position, whether it would report to the county or it would report to some entity that the county would contract with that fulfills so many of these responsibilities and is frankly going to be the leader on so many of these items. And again, Mark, I go back to you and your group. That better be something that you and your group buy into because that's who would utilize a lot of, once we get some of the planning and initial processes up, that's who that person is going to be responsible to and for as we go ahead, similar to what Ames just did and created a position with the Ames Economic Development Commission that's more of a joint position working on some of the issues that they have. I take those two items of everything that we were presented here and I say we better come to some sort of resolution on what kind of buy-in is there, is the concept of this plan. Not that every single idea is one that we're going to pursue, But is the concept of this plan and seeing how far down the road we want to go something that, others are going to buy into, Mark, specifically with your group? And if so, then let's look at how we're going to have staff availability to do that. And if there is that, what that position looks like, who it reports to, and everything like that. To me, Wayne, those are the first two items we better come to some resolution to, because we can want to do the rest of this. The fact is we already have Leanne and her staff stretched completely thin. Right. No plans for any more help right outside of a position like this. And so if we don't get the buy-in, we don't decide that we can create a position like this, the rest of this kind of is just spinning our wheels. We're not going to have the ability to really address much of it. So that's my take on all of this.
Wow, it's too much to even respond to. No, I agree. The question that comes to mind right away, though, is what timetable would it really take for us to be able to get that type of information? Because, as you well know, if it's the county position, we're in the budgeting process to approve for fiscal year 12-13, will need to be decided relatively soon unless we plan to make that final determination with what I would consider funds in our carryover, ending fund balances and things of that nature, which would be outside of the purview of the budgeting agreement. But I do think that that's a very important step. There's no question, if we're really committed to moving forward with this, I don't think we can really expect that it's going to be done with existing staff as is right now. I think it's just too much for that to happen.
Well, and for me, Wayne, in the budgeting process, as we've gone through it already, I believe that we had the foresight enough to add money to our economic development line item, which does run through Mark's Story County Economic Development Group. It gives us the possibility of some funding there to possibly do some of these things. I look at a couple of these things and the coordinated budgeting process between engineering and conservation and planning and development. We've already missed our opportunity to do that for FY13.
Right.
So those are the kind of things we're going to have to look at down the road. But to me, before we go in and spend a whole lot of time on any of this, I feel like we need to address those first two issues. First, Mark, when does your group get back together again? In April. So, I mean, we need to get the word out and see what kind of buy-in we have from that group, what kind of role they want to play in this. Because, Mark, I'm talking about an enhanced presence for that group if, in fact, we're gonna go ahead with this. And then that would lead me to the things like the visioning and ultimately the planning. And from that, you start to see what items filter through into a finalized plan and priority for us.
A suggestion for the board to consider is hosting a roundtable discussion with working with Mark and other entities to help identify those people to come, have the report given to them, just like similar presentation what Charlie did today, but really focusing on the strategic partnerships, as you pointed out. We'd invite all the stakeholders that originally were at the table to help put this together as an opportunity. It's kind of like a full circle. You were here at the beginning. You're here at the beginning again. Here's the report. Now help us. Here's our jumping point. Where do we go from here? And I know we're in the work sessions for budgets, but I think if, like you said, if we continue to wait, it's going to be March, April, May, so maybe February to hold that type of roundtable. Maybe over a lunch hour when people's before and after, when people's times do get a little bit more open as a possibility.
Well, and let's not forget that there are a couple other key cities that have strong economic development initiative: Nevada, Huxley, along with Story City and so forth. They've used TIF, they've used other ways to attract business as long as with the City of Ames, and I think we need to be, they need to be inclusive of that. And then as we start talking about future developments in the eastern part of the county with what maybe the Dakins Lake project may do, you know, there may be some other communities wanting to come to the table. So I do, and one of the things I think I heard a new board member stress, that this has to be about Story County. It just can't be about just City of Ames per se. And so I don't want to, you know, exclude that. I know that's, but when a lot of times when we're thinking, we normally think of the most populous city and so forth, but we also recognize that there are many other communities that have done some outstanding things in this area that need to be at the table helping us plan and understand what our role is and how we as a county can help engage and help pave the way for attracting different types of businesses to come to Story County and be productive in job creation. So
yeah, well, and I think that's a great point. I mean, whatever we do, as positive of an impact as it might have on Ames, it's going to be on the periphery of what they do. I mean, Ames already does so much. And then to a lesser extent, same is going to be true for Nevada and Huxley and Story City. But as you filter down to our smaller cities, if, in fact, we were to implement some of this, a lot of this, all of this, you start to see a really dramatic impact to some of those smaller towns. Not that we'd be doing a lot more in support of them than we would for Ames or Nevada, but just what they're able to do right now is nothing or close to nothing, and so anything you do is going to make it exponentially greater what's being done in their community. Anything that we would offer to Ames or Nevada or even Story City and Huxley, they're already doing so much, it's just going to be in support of what they're already doing. But this is going to, Wayne, you're right, it's going to take countywide buy-in. And it's got to be more than, well, the original idea of this was never for the county to be the leader in economic development.
Right.
It was to take a more active role in supporting the efforts of economic development, to help make us more cohesive in our economic development efforts. There's already so much work going on in the county to be more cohesive in their economic developments. And again, Mark Jackson's been a leader in getting that done. We just got to see how this plan fits into that and what kind of buy-in there is, and then what kind of support it's going to need from a what in my mind would be a county-funded position, whether it reports completely to the county or it has some kind of joint reporting or reports somewhere else and we're contracting for service. Those are the kind of things in my mind that we would need to work out.
I would suggest maybe we schedule, Leanne suggested, schedule a roundtable meeting to get the stakeholders that were present last fall, present the report to them, and that would be a good opportunity to gauge the amount of interest and in the amount of buy-in that we can expect,
mm-hmm.
And then we can plan what our next step's going to be after that.
I have access to your calendar.
Yeah. I'd like to not delay it, push it that far down the road. I think we need to try to encourage folks to go ahead and take a look at the report that is there, and when they come to the meeting with questions, it should really help facilitate some good discussion.
Mr. Chair, can we ask if anybody who's here would like to give their initial reactions?
Very much so. I
don't know if you guys would like to say anything about this. I mean, I know you sat through a long meeting to get to this today. Nancy, I don't know if you have anything you'd like to say about it. I'll tell you, I was highly impressed with this, and I'm going to be very interested to see where it goes from here. I just think it's bigger than just the three of us as to where it goes from here. Come on up.
We need to get you on the mic.
Mark would like to hear from you as well.
State your name.
Charlie Kuster with the City of Ames Planning Department. Sat through some of the initial meetings of last fall, and I thought it was a great process at that point. It's come together with, I think, as an excellent framework for further discussion. Start working on that visioning and strategic plan, and I think you've got some buy-in from the communities. I mean, there's nothing that I see in that plan now that's inconsistent with the interests of Ames, inconsistent with our urban fringe plan, which extends 2 miles into the unincorporated part of the county. I think we've got some examples of things that we can draw upon already. As you mentioned, the relationship that the City of Ames has with the EDC on that shared position. One thing it didn't mention is the what role the MPO might play. You know, they are already an extra-jurisdictional body that invests in infrastructure in the county, both the Story County and Boone County. So I think it's a great framework, and anxious to help you guys build upon it.
Great.
Thank you
so much for your comments. Mark, anything?
Absolutely. I jotted down some thoughts.
State again who you are for the record.
Oh, I'm Mark Jackson.
This is audio.
I'm chair of the Story County Economic Development Group, and I'm not speaking on behalf of them, and I'm also the city manager in Story City. You know, and thanking the board just for its past support in economic development is the first thing to say as well, and really highly commend the board for taking this initiative and seeing where the county can take it to the next step in its involvement in economic development. That's pretty impressive in and of itself. You know, I would agree with a number of what Charlie said, and Rick and the rest of you. I think it's a good first step. There's a lot of suggestions in there, and probably I would agree with Supervisor Sanders and say the next step is to bring together at least the really four active cities in economic development, Ames, Nevada, Huxley, and Story City, to see where they're at. And I'm not saying not the rest of the communities, but those are the four that really have involvement and a stake in economic development, and really sort through a number of those priorities. I like that the report is balanced, because quality of life is a key for economic development. But I did notice a number of those things on there wouldn't really relate to economic development. Mm-hmm. And so I think you can take a number of those ideas. But I would agree with Supervisor Sanders. You got to get buy-in from the communities first to see where they're at and are they on the same page as well. In terms of the position, I think you're the Ted Tedesco, Sandy Upstreet committee, I think one of the things they're looking at probably is whether you should go to a county administrator type of position. I can tell you most city managers, a large part of what they do is economic development. And so that may be one thing you want to look at, is that type of rather than a separate economic development position, is that position a part of a county administrator position as well? So although I applaud Supervisor Sanders in moving forward quickly, because I'm one that likes to move forward quickly, that may be something that you want to look at as well in how that's done. But I think it's a great first step. And again, to Leanne and Charlie, bring it in. I was, along with Sanders, a little skeptical at first, but I think it was a very good process and came out with some great ideas.
Good. Thank you. Good.
And if you wanted to meet with the Economic Development Group, we would call a meeting as soon as possible, and we can send that out.
Good. Right. Very good. Good. Anyone else? This is your chance. Good. Okay. Come on, Nancy. I do have a muzzle, but I don't think I'll get it for you.
Newest member of our Planning and Zoning Commission.
You bet.
Only a couple of things. Okay, first of all, I absolutely applaud moving forward quickly. Too many times we let things fall by the wayside, and, oh, we'll get to that. And that, you know, especially in this regard, since so much has already been put into it, to not move forward quickly would be an awful shame. All right. The other thing I thought of as we were sitting there and I was listening to the other two is I understand the four major cities right now. At the same time, I would invite representatives from the other cities. Here's why. As discussions are being held regarding what's happening in these four major cities, it may spur some thoughts and some ideas that these other communities may want to investigate on their own and bring to the table. Okay, I think that we would make a big mistake by not including representatives from all of the communities within Story County.
Yeah, I don't think from our position that we would not exclude, we would exclude anyone. We would certainly recognize those four that have some key stake in the game right now, but again, to reach out to the others, because you are correct, especially when you look at some of the things and the suggestions up there when they start talking about tying trails and other recreational opportunities and making it a countywide. That encompasses, you know, all aspects of Story County. So,
is this available on our website?
Yeah, I put a link on our website, and I think a PDF document on our website, too. So
okay.
It's
so
definitely
for
out
anybody
there.
In the public who wants to take a look at it.
Great.
Okay. Thank you.
Good. Okay. So without any further discussion, then we'll move on to the next item on the agenda, the approval of the personnel action. None.
Don't have any.
There's none. Consent agenda. There's please remove item 6.
Move approval with noted change.
Second.
And moved and second the approval of the consent agenda with noted changes. Toot?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. Consent agenda is adopted. No other report. Public forum 2. Comments from the public on items not on the agenda. Is there anyone? Okay, seeing no one. Announcements from the supervisors. Mr. Toot? Sanders?
Pass.
Clinton, just to announce tonight at 6, I believe it is, the Ames Assessors Conference Board will meet, 6:30. Okay, and then I think there is a
Government Restructuring Committee
meeting
in Nevada.
Yep.
At 7.
At 7.
And I'll be at that.
Okay, all right. So with that, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved. Second.
And moved in second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Meeting is adjourned.
Good job.
Good. Thank you.